The largest away following Reading have had for 3 years see a result remarkably similar to the past one, a defeat in London. This time it's Fulham, not Arsenal, but it's last minute heartbreak for Steve Clarke's side, who see their four-game unbeaten run come crashing to an end. We'll discuss that, plenty more transfer speculation, and answer your tweets and emails in the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode number 47. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of tylerstem.com, and I am joined, as always, by deputy editor, Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Evening.
How are you?
I'm fine. I was very, very disappointed on Saturday evening / Sunday, but getting over it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just getting there.
And as a treat on this winter night, we've ditched that unprofessional joke of a podcaster, Alan West, and replaced him. We've upgraded in the transfer window. We've got Rob Langham from the two unfortunates who joins us for his third appearance. We owe you some sort of talisman or something now.
Oh, thanks very much, Dan. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, and I really enjoyed the last time I was on, so looking forward to it tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for stepping in late notice. In all seriousness, Westy will be back next week. He's got other commitments, you know. We're at the bottom of his pile now, Johnny. He's big time. He's like Royce Drenthe. He's off into sunning himself somewhere.
I was going to say, does Rob get a contract extension after the 10th podcast or so? So
I think so, yeah. Testimonial after 10 podcast appearances.
Yeah, you might have to sort of stop my number of appearances after 9, just so that the clause doesn't kick
in. Yeah, we mentioned that last week, didn't we, with Johnny Sulaco and Sean Gota. So get into those territories anyway. It's always a good podcast when you get a Sean Gota reference inside the first 3 minutes, so let's pick up on that.
I'm not sure that's true, to be honest.
Feed the goat and he will score.
He scored a few, didn't he?
Depressingly, Sean Gota is probably amongst the last 10 strikers we actually paid money for.
I remember where I was when we signed Sean Gota. Complete sidetrack here, but I was sunning myself in Hawaii with my parents, and we were logging onto the internet cafe, checking all the Reading website, etc. And I just said to my dad, "Feed the goat," and he just went, "Yes, we've got the goat."
He didn't do too bad at the beginning of his first season.
No, I was really pleased. I remember there was an early game against Forest where Gota and Scott Murray both had really good games.
Yeah, Scott Murray.
And we won 3-0, and I think that was against a team who were one of the season favourites that year.
Was that just before Pardew went to West Ham? I think it was, wasn't it?
Possibly. He left in sort of October time, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we got Coughlin.
Anyway, completely sidetracked. Let's talk about Fulham. Reading go to Craven Cottage this Saturday. As I said, they brought their largest away following since that 4-1 defeat at Arsenal in the Premier League in those heady days of 2013. And a good day out, I think, by all accounts, and a decent Reading performance to look at. Johnny, you were there. But unfortunately, not the result they wanted. A last-minute winner sends them to a 2-1 defeat.
Yeah, a few people on our Tylehurst and mini group that we have on Facebook were saying I might be throwing around a few F-words today in frustration.
Angry Johnny.
The two F-words that I'd be throwing around were frustration and finishing. Because it was just, we completely dominated them. The first half really wasn't too much to write home about. I think Roddy Yeager had a decent chance for them. We had a couple of pot shots from outside the box. Second half comes out, you know, they score within about 5 minutes, and then we're on top for about the next half hour. And Fulham, I can't remember them having a chance, having a shot, really getting out of their half. And the pressure was really, really, really building. Paul gets a header from a corner, his first goal of the season, I believe, in the league anyway,
yeah,
to equalise. And then from then, for the next half hour, they did not have a chance. We had plenty of chances, but nobody was in the box to finish them. And then the classic sucker punch right at the end. Again, maybe their second or third shot on goal goes in. And, you know, it's just the luck turning. You know, we've had a few... well, you remember back to Middlesbrough last week where we didn't play particularly well and managed to sneak away with a draw somehow. This one, really, we've come away with a loss when we deserved all 3 points, I'd have said, on the balance of things.
Yeah, Steve Clarke said in his post-match he would have been disappointed with the draw because he really felt Reading should have won that game, and he was left scratching his head. He called it the best team performance since he took over. And considering that, spells also included a pretty good 2-2 draw at Brighton, beating Norwich and winning away at Huddersfield, as well as getting a draw against Borough. I mean, that's fairly high praise, really. Obviously, it's not lofty, lofty praise. But, Rob, 21 shots to 10, Reading outshot Fulham. But again, just the one goal and only six of those are on target. Are you worried at all by Reading's lack of finishing at the moment?
A little bit. It's clear that we're light up front. The pod came back and scored a good goal, really good header, but I think it's fair to say that most of us wouldn't put our house on him at the moment. He's never going to score you a lot of goals. Dominic Samuel's still in the background, but I think most people consider it's too early for him. Murray's gone back to Crystal Palace. I would have a question for Johnny, though, really, in that most of Clark's performances so far, the performances under Clark, have been characterised by quite solid defending and putting defence first. And it seems that we were much more attacking on Saturday. Was that really noticeable?
Yeah, I think it was. And it was, you know, it was sort of defending from the front. So, as I said, you know, they'd aim sort of like long balls forward, really, and we just pick them up easily. I mean, as I said, the only two chances they got, I think, inside between Gunter and Hector are the two that they scored from. And that's really frustrating when you play so well for 90 minutes, and then in the 91st minute you get a sucker punch like that. It really, really was gutting, because, you know, we were sort of attacking from the front, not letting them have any time on the ball. All they could do was just clear the decks, and, you know, we'd recycle the ball and get going again. And it was the speed of it as well. I mean, we'll come on to talk about Gareth McClure, I'm sure, but he was sensational on the day. Their left back did not have a chance against him. He beat their left back every single time, got at least a corner every single time, or put the cross into the box. And, you know, Gareth McClure, you could see that he was a clear part of the game plan. Give it to McCleary and see what happens.
Well, let's talk about him now. You brought him up. A fantastic performance by Gareth McCleary, by all accounts. Everyone's there. He's absolutely dominating our Man of the Match poll on Sims player ratings, which you can go and read on thetalisman.com. I think he's got well over 80% of the vote so far. Fantastic game for him. Great to have him back after another little injury setback. He's absolutely crucial. And Rob, again, we ran a piece sort of asking who is Reading's most valuable player. And for me right now, it has to be McCleary, because he's the only person that I actually think is going to create something out of fairly nothing.
I think on the Tyler Sten pod extra, when you were talking to Charles Watts last week, that was the first name that sprung to mind for Charles, and it was certainly the first name that sprung to mind for me as well. He's definitely the player that excites me the most. He's the player who can go past people. One could say that he maybe has like one game that's good and one game that's not so good. But I think he's terrific, really. He's a great entertainer, works really hard as well. And it's just so pleasing to see such a good performance from him, because I think that's probably the first really, really good one since he's come back from a long injury. And that's important psychologically for any player, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I would mitigate it with one thing. And we talked about Mackie syndrome on this podcast. You know, it looks really good, but no end product. But that was the one frustrating thing about Gareth McCleary's play. You know, he took his man on every single time, beat him sort of 80% of the time. But then, you know, it's quite telling that we never managed to get that final ball or that final finish. Now, that's not to say that it wasn't his fault all the time. He played one brilliant through ball to Nick Blackman, who came on as a sub, who just couldn't quite sort of poke his toe onto the end of it to divert his path as a keeper. And there was another one that really frustrated me as well, because it was, I think it was across to the back post from Robson Kanu, and McCleary was on the corner of the 6-yard box on the right hand side, and he, instead of just blasting it at goal, have a go, he tried to square it back into the middle for nobody. It was clearly something that, you know, you'd see on a video game, or he clearly thought that someone would be in the box, but there wasn't anyone there. And I think that that does come down to possibly a little bit of old habits with the Nigel Adkins side, who would try and walk it in, create the perfect chance. Yeah. And I think we talked about it last week. There's no one willing just yet to put their foot through the ball and have a go. And I think that was the main problem we had. Mackie had one sort of tap from about 6 yards at the keeper easy collected. There's no one willing to just have a go. Aside from Danny Williams, who had a couple of shots from about 20 yards, but you'd never expect him to score those. So I think we need a striker, or we need the wingers and the forwards as we have at the moment to just let their inhibitions go and have a go.
Rob, do you think we're in danger of becoming far too predictable? Our stats desk have run this in a couple of pieces this year about how the more Reading seem to cross, the less effective they are, because basically all teams are doing is keeping Reading at arm's length and realising, if you keep them out around 20 yards or so, the crossing is not great. It's barely hurting you, and they keep you at an arm's length, and basically Reading play into their game plan. Do you think Reading are lacking that dynamism? Do you think they're too predictable?
I think there's certainly a lack of potency, but I'm not too worried about it. I've just been encouraged by the way that Clark has steadied the ship, and we have collected a few points, like the Middlesbrough one in particular, against teams that, let's face it, probably better than us. And that, for me, is a good start. I think we're 5 or 6 games into Clark's reign, and I'm just happy with what's gone so far, including the fact that we had a good performance on Saturday. So perhaps, but I think I think at the moment, I think it's just each step at a time, and I'm not too worried by that.
Johnny, for me, one of the most worrying things, and I mentioned this on the podcast section with Charles, is, and the stat was damning. In 100 combined games between Hal Robson-Kanu, Danny Williams, Oliver Norwood, Hope Akpan, and a couple of others whose names I forget. Jordan Abeeds is another one. Mackie. Yeah, and McCleary. I think combined, they've got one goal. Jake Cooper scored two in one game. Mm. Now, in those 100 games, if you're getting one goal from that group of players, it sounds alarm bells.
And that was a penalty as well from Hal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, and you know, as we said, it is about getting those wingers to put their foot through it when they can, or you know, getting the midfielders to you know drive into the box.
Yeah, it needs gamble.
You know,
you don't see enough players bursting in anymore. Do
remember Sidwell when he always used to charge into the box. I mean, I think he got sort of 10 goals a season from midfield. Danny Williams did bring that into his game last year. I remember a couple of times when he'd sort of charge into the box past the striker. I remember one goal particularly at Millwall, I think it was, where he might have grabbed a couple on that day. But yeah, it is troubling that we're not quite seeing enough goals from that scene. But as I said last week, the change in attack isn't going to happen instantly because they have been ingrained in this style of trying to pass the ball around and create the perfect chance, almost create tap-ins, for a year and a half. And that isn't going to change. Steve Clark's done very well to get the defence more solid in, 6 weeks? Yep. Less than that. I think the attack is going to take a little bit more time simply because the players don't have that confidence yet to put their foot through it, have a go, and it doesn't matter what happens.
I think if we're going to talk positives, you know, both of you have mentioned the defence. One man in particular who's a surprising stat this week. You know, we've done our player ratings throughout the season, and no player since September had picked up 3 7-out-of-10s in a row. And one man achieved that feat with his 7-out-of-10 this weekend, Chris Gunter. I'm still not convinced about his positioning for the first goal. I'm a bit concerned at how a long ball from Scott Parker completely pierces Hector and Gunter. But that aside, he's been fantastic, and it's great to see him achieving that consistency again, Rob.
Yeah, it's been a big improvement. And I think he's probably just been galvanised by the fact that Clark's come in and has immediately trusted him and put him in consistently in the correct position at right back rather than all this right-footed player at left back nonsense. And I think, yes, I think he's just risen to the challenge. Maybe it's the fact there haven't been any international fixtures as well, which means that he's probably like less tired than he is in the kind of autumn and later in the season. But yes, I mean, I think certainly he's good enough to be in the team every week. He should be someone who's always on the team sheet. And yes, he seems to have responded well.
I think the other thing is he's been given a lot more licence to get forward as well, which sounds a bit strange when you think that Nigel Adkins likes to, you know, pass around in the team, but there's a lot of times when Chris Gunter now gets forward to support Gareth McCleary, and as we said, defending from the front, you know, if you box the opposition in and don't give them a chance to play their way out, then that really helps the defence as well. I have to admit I haven't seen the goal again, but I'd question why Scott Parker was allowed to play a pass like that in the first place, seeing as he's not the most mobile and certainly not the most visionary.
Yeah, he's a good 10 yards into the Reading half as well. This isn't a hopeful ping from inside his own box.
No. Yeah.
He's driving forward.
So I'm sure that they'll, you know, pin the blame on a few players because there are probably a lot of mistakes leading up to the goal. But no, going back to Chris Gunter, I mean, you know, I said I hadn't lost the faith in him. You don't go from being a solid 7 out of 10 to a 6 or 5 out of 10 just over the course of a pre-season. He's always had that ability, and he seems to just be getting it together now. Every player has a lull, and hopefully he's over that now.
Yeah, I think he's also benefiting from McCleary's return because, of course, they have that understanding going back to the Forest days, and I think they're really comfortable together on that wing.
Yeah, and we've got a question, well, we had a tweet sent in later talking about partnerships, so we might talk about that a little later on. But the only negative, I suppose, is the league position. Now, Reading still got a bit of breathing space on those below them, but I mean, Fulham winning took them above Reading, and they sit 18th in the table now, 7 points ahead of Millwall in the relegation places. Wigan a further 2 points back, and I think it's safe to say Blackpool are dead and buried already, well adrift at the bottom. They're already 9 points from safety, but 18th place now, 14 points from a playoff spot and only 7 from the relegation places.
So, I mean, you don't worry that Reading are going to go down, but I do wonder when the honeymoon is going to end for Steve Clark.
If they lose at Millwall.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and, you know, that's another important game because that puts them up to 26 and we'd only be 4 points ahead of them. So, I think most Reading fans will be happy with what Steve Clarke has done so far, even though the results haven't necessarily all gone our way. I don't think we'll be relegated at the end of the season. I think we will get performances together, but you know, I'd give him another sort of couple of weeks, maybe a month or so, to try and galvanise the team and get a scoring goal.
Otherwise, he's out. Johnny wants him gone. He's turned on him already. He's only got a month.
No, I like Steve.
Rob, worried at all looking behind you?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I was thinking about my priorities as a fan, whether it was the FA Cup and the league. And I think if we'd beaten Fulham, I would have said unequivocally the FA Cup all day long. I still think the FA Cup, and I think we might talk about that a bit later on. But checked the table just before we got here, and, you know, 7 points. I mean, Millwall, you wonder whether there's going to be a change of manager there. And change of managers often galvanise teams. They get sort of two or three wins. And Holloway really does seem to be struggling to motivate the team. Wigan, I mean, Malcolm Mackay was a catastrophic appointment on all levels. And Blackpool are obviously the biggest basket case we've seen in this division for many, many years. So I think we might be fortunate in that we're in a year where there's some very poor sides there. Leeds have also got some deep financial trouble. But Brighton, I went to the Amex on Boxing Day and I was pretty impressed with them, actually, and subsequently Chris Hughton, you know, they've had a few good wins. They lost to Brentford on Saturday, but I don't think they're going to go down either. So, and Rotherham, I think, just don't have the resources, really. I think they're a pretty small club for this division. So yeah, I think we're going to be okay, but we do need to prove it by getting some results, and it'd be really good to do that over the next month or so, that so there's a bit of breathing space. Yeah, and we don't have to worry.
As you said, I mean, if you if you win at Millwall, then you'll be at least a minimum of 9 points clear. Yeah. And that's a lot. That's a lot for teams that aren't winning a lot. Yeah. To overhaul. So it would be a lot. But like I said, lose that game against Millwall, and I said, with a couple of big teams down there, you might get a little bit nervous. I'm not at that stage yet, but I've got to admit, I am looking a bit more behind me than above me.
Yeah, we're now at the bottom of that sort of, well, you know, you've got three teams below us on 26.
League, isn't
yeah.
It?
And you just don't want to be sucked down into that, because even psychologically, and then sort of preys on your mind, like, oh, you know, we need to start winning games. You never want to get into that mindset of we need to start winning games. We should expect to be winning games. And hopefully we can, you know, set the record straight next Tuesday night.
Yeah, indeed. Right. Time for us now to move on and digest some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. As always, you can keep up with the very latest news over on the tarlhurstend.com, but a few news stories to digest, should I say, for us today. Starting with everybody's favourite unprofessional joke of a player, Royston Trenta. This man's off-field antics are about as laughable as his on-field performance. Over the course of this week, he looks like he's gone. We thought he was off to China, seemingly done deal. Then it was off. Now a deal is back on for him to go to Turkey. We're expecting, fingers crossed, toes crossed, and everything else you can cross, that deal to go through. But it's just not happening. And Rob, just before we move on, we ran a poll over the last couple of weeks on the website, and the amount of people that still want Royston Trenta to have another chance at his football club boggles my mind.
Unfathomable. I don't think I've got another word for it. Why would you ever want him back?
It's just they see a couple of things he does on a YouTube video or something and think, oh yeah, he's rejuvenated. It's not. It's the exception that proves the rule. There's a reason that no other teams are sniffing around him. It's because he's bad. He's awful. He's just an awful footballer. He is, as Westy said, an unprofessional joke of footballer.
I mean, I do have a friend who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan, and he has seen him play a lot of times this season and has said he's got something that none of our other players have got. And he is actually reasonably positively disposed towards him. But
if he was a 19-year-old called Johnny Williams, not the Crystal Palace guy, if he was called Johnny Williams, he was 19, he'd come through the Reading Academy, and he was getting paid £3,000 a week, you'd probably keep him, because he can do something out of nowhere. But when he's a £30,000 a week, former 10-figure transfer player that lives a very flashy lifestyle on and off the pitch, you're not worth it. You're not worth it.
No, but I guess that is part of the argument. I'm not arguing that he should play for us again, but that could be part of the argument, that he is earning this money, that he has, you know, been bought and scouted by all these top clubs, and now finally he's fallen here. and you just want to, I guess a part of you just wants to be that team that finally unlocks everything and finally, you know, where he gets it all together, because he does have ability, he just can't apply it. And I guess that, you know, we haven't particularly seen very exciting football over the last, you know, 2, maybe 3 years. And we know that Royston Drenthe can excite the crowd with what he does, but he can equally frustrate you. And, you know, sometimes you just remember the positive parts of it, and I wouldn't want to see him back here.
There's got to be something very, very, very wrong if a financially stricken club won't even give you a squad number. Where Nigel Atkins looked like he was having no money at all, he still wouldn't plug him back in the side. So, no, hopefully this deal to Turkey comes off, and cheerio, Royston. Moving on to a player at the opposite end of the spectrum, a player that does always give 100% and may not be the best technical player in the world, but a man that certainly you can never fault his effort, is Glenn Murray. Now, it looked as if the Murray deal was dead. He went back to Crystal Palace, started against Tottenham and Dover, put in a good shift, came on again at the weekend, and it seemed like his Premier League dreams were back on track. But Alan Pardew might have other ideas. He's already signed Sonogo from Arsenal, and he's on the verge of signing another forward in Rudy Gestede from Blackburn, which, according to TalkSport, would mean that Glenn Murray would be allowed to move to Reading in what they report as a £2 million deal. Now, the first time I heard this, Johnny, I almost fell off my seat, because the day Reading spend £2 million on a 31-year-old striker is, I don't know, the day Royston Drenthe puts it all together.
Or the day Royston Drenthe leaves, probably, seeing as we need the money to do it. If it happens, we need it, because you could see that we really missed a striker who could finish. I think Charles said something similar on Twitter. Glenn Murray would have scored 2 or 3 of those goals on Saturday, and we wouldn't, you know, we'd be sat here talking about an entirely different game.
£2 million, though, Rob.
No, I mean, I don't think we can contemplate it, mainly because of the financial situation. I don't know the absolute ins and outs, but we know we're close to the edge on the FFP and other issues, and I just think £2 million is just too much. I think that's Palace trying it on. You know, and I think maybe I would welcome him back for £1 million or something. And I do like him. I think he's a good player. I saw him score 2 goals at Brighton. You know, he's the only person who can really do that. He gets on the end of crosses. I've been very happy with him. But I think, really, I think the state the club is in, I think we just kind of...
Right player, wrong time for me.
I mean, I think Reading have always gone against the grain sort of slightly and gone for these players who do have resale value, and I think that's perhaps why some people are sort of questioning this £2 million for a 31-year-old striker. If he gives us, you know, another 10 goals in next season, maybe 15, 20 goals next season, that is value as far as I'm concerned. Not every player that we buy has to have a resale value, in my opinion.
It's just Jason Roberts.
Yeah, you know, and it is just the way that Reading have generally done things over the last... over the last few years. There's nothing to say that Glenn Murray is suddenly going to become a rubbish footballer when he hits the age of 33 or whatever. I think he, you know, he knows where the goal is, he knows the team, and he's already proven that he's a very capable striker at this level. If we have the funds to spend £2 million on him for a couple of years, I'd take that deal, because you're not going to get much better for that amount of money. And certainly if you want to buy someone resale value, you're going to be looking at 4 or 5 million.
Yeah, very fair point. As I said, it's just a £2 million outlay plus... it's the wages as well, which will probably be conservatively 20 grand a week over a 2 or 3 year spell.
Which we're already paying for the original loan spell, I guess. But
yeah, well, considering we've got a Russian on the books, he's still here for another 18 months as well. I don't know. As I said, for me, right player, possibly not the wrong time. I'd love to see him back on loan to the end of the season and see where we are. Once those FFP barriers have been cleared, I think we've got a lot more flexibility. But for now, I don't see where Reading are suddenly getting £2 million from. Unless Royston Drenthe was on a lot more than we thought. Anyway, moving on to another player that could be returning. This time he's already at the club. Hope Akpan has reports in Nigeria suggesting he's close to return to fitness. So that'd be nice. It will mean for the first time in a very, very, very long time the Reading don't have a senior first team player injured. Can you believe we're saying that?
Not really.
Anton Ferdinand?
Yes.
He's back. No, but Anton Ferdinand's back in training as well.
Wow.
I know.
Whoa.
I think we're welcoming back. Obviously, it's always good to bolster the squad, but I think at the moment, with the midfield, Norwood and Williams is quite entrenched. And then, of course, you've got Karachan and Guthrie just behind them. So I think Hope, unless he changes formation and goes to 3 in the middle of the park, which he might do, particularly away from home, a game where we feel that we're going to try and nick a 1-0, he might want an extra defensive player in there. I think it's just a question of getting back properly fit, getting in the under-21s a couple of games, and then let's see where he goes from there.
I mean, Danny Guthrie's contract is up at the end of the season, so you don't know whether we'll renew that, so that's another chance for him. We haven't renewed Jem's contract yet, although you imagine we will get round to doing that. I think Hopakpan has a place in the squad, and I say the squad, not necessarily the team, but you know, when he came in, he certainly wasn't terrible. He gets a lot of stick, a bit like Nick Blackman does, because he's not quite the player that we hoped or thought he could be yet, but I still think he has the potential in him. And you know, clearly has he been capped by Nigeria now, so they see something in him. Steve Coppell saw something in him, so that you know there is the potential and the ability there. And I don't think he'll necessarily get into the side ahead of the other midfielders that we have, but I'm certainly happy that he's back.
Yeah, absolutely. I said the more players you've got to choose from, the better the competition for places, the better it is, really. Right, that just about wraps things up. No pub chat this week, but we've got a bulging mailbag, so we'll move straight on to your tweets and emails.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, thanks very much to those of you who got in touch with us this week. You've heard the contact details there, but I'll quickly rattle them off again. It's at The Tarlhurst End for your tweets, facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End, and also you can get us on email at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. And we've actually had some Facebook posts this week, Johnny. Makes a nice change.
Yeah, I see that we've started doing a Facebook Get Your Questions In. So
yeah,
just another way for people to get in touch. I do miss the long, winding emails we used to get.
Indeed, yeah.
Long paragraphs.
By all means, give us a like on Facebook. I said it's a great way to get the latest news and info straight onto your news feed. And Ian Phillips has left us a comment for today's show. He says, if our current team with no injuries played the team that won the championship a few seasons ago, what would the score be? Do you think it's our team that's suffering, or has the league got harder? That's a very interesting question.
I don't think the league has got harder. I think, you know, we've obviously had a few problems with injuries, but you can't blame, you know, results on that. So I just think that that team that we had back then was completely on a roll. And when you get confidence up and when you get on a roll, it's very difficult to stop you. Look at Bournemouth, who are, you know, at the top of the league. Not many people expected them to be there. Ipswich, I don't think many people expected them to be challenging up at the top of the league. I thought they were just...
Even Derby haven't exactly got superstar names.
No.
No, but Derby came... Well, they came an extra time away from reaching the Premier League last year. So they had quality. But Ipswich, Middlesbrough, I thought they were just teams in the Championship going nowhere. And equally, you know, look at what happened with Forest. So I think how Forest have dropped off. So I think, you know, momentum and just carrying results on and, you know, getting a harmonious squad can be very good. And luckily, that 106 points team just had it all in terms of confidence and in terms of them fighting for each other. I wouldn't want to say what the result would be if this team played that team.
On paper, I think this team is better. The current squad, if everyone's fit, I think that this team is better as a group of individuals. And if they were allowed to play together for a season... it depends what type point in the season, because even that championship winning side put in some fairly average displays before they got together. It was only when Jason Roberts joined that they really clicked.
Oh, that championship winning side.
Yes, not the 05-06.
I thought we were talking
05-06. No, the 05-06 team would probably spank most teams, as judged by the fact they've got a league record point. So.
Yeah, this is true.
But no, that team 3 years ago, I mean, Jason Roberts, who's never one to be shy of an opinion, has been saying that the work done to get that team up is one of the greatest things he's seen in football, because it was just so out of nowhere and took such a lot of things to go right for them. And I said, I think the quality in this side, I think it's better.
I could see that being a very attritional game, actually. Maybe it would be a 1-0 or a 0-0.
Yeah, it wouldn't be exciting, that's for sure. I mean, I think Roberts actually might be the difference between the two teams. I think we don't really have someone like him at the moment, just as he was the difference when he came into the squad at that point, and just suddenly we got that succession of 1-0 wins, really scrappy 1-0 wins against teams like Bristol City. And I think I think he's better than anything we've got now up front, including Murray. So I think they would still edge it, just because of that momentum as well, like you were saying, Johnny.
Depends if Jimmy Kebbe turned up. We've had no answer to our appeal of where is Jimmy Kebbe yet from last week's show. So fears grow for Jimmy Kebbe.
Has he deleted his Twitter as well?
He's still on Twitter. He just hasn't posted for years.
Yeah, he's not a frequent Twitterer.
No, if you have seen Jimmy Kebbe, please get in touch with us.
Have you started the milk carton
campaign? No, I've not.
You're not shelled out for that?
No, not yet. Budgets are tight, Johnny. Budgets are tight.
FFP, right. Cut our cloth.
Indeed. Right, moving on. We can't even afford Westie anymore. moving on. Simeon, Tullhurst End, part of our editorial team. He has said, does Jake Taylor have a future at Reading? He's not getting any game time at the moment, even though he hasn't been any worse than anyone else.
But I don't think he's been any better than anyone else. Yeah, well, I think we talked about him before. He got a couple of goals, but I could never remember anything else that Jake Taylor did in games. And that's not necessarily a slight on him, because obviously he was very hard working and, you know, he would do his job. But he didn't have that one quality that you say, oh, Jake Taylor got a bit of pace, got a bit of trickery, puts in a good cross. Could he have a future at Reading? Yes, he could, but I think he needs a loan spell away. Now that we've got the midfield just about fully up to speed, I think he could do with a loan spell, maybe down in League One or lower Championship. Actually, no. We can't give him to a rival. Can't give him to a relegation rival.
I think he's a good squad player. Possibly a little bit like Jay Tab in the last promotion season.
That's exactly what I was thinking of, actually. Jay Tab's in form of his life.
Doing very well, as is Noel Hunt with a couple of goals on Saturday, I noticed. But I think with all the players back from injury, as you said, I think it's really hard to see him getting in, but he does work very hard, and I think he's always someone who, if he comes off the bench just to shore things up, you're pretty happy to see him in there. But if we're feeling that we're one-dimensional at the moment, he's not the player. You know, we need people who are going to be more attacking.
Yeah, he's a great utility player to have around the squad and on the bench, but yeah, he's not going to be in my first 11. I'm sorry. I think he's done very, very well to get where he has, because judging by the reports he was getting when he was out on loan, and I used to write the loan watch figure, people weren't exactly raving about him. I think he was down at Exeter, he didn't do particularly well, and a couple of other clubs, and everyone was just saying, yeah, he's decent, but no one was raving about him. So for him to get a few Championship goals, I said he's won us a couple of games this season, and I think he's done fantastic well. So just sticking around the squad's a great achievement, but do I think he's going to be a player going forward if the Thai group do have money and want to push us to the next level? I'm sorry, I don't see it right now.
Another player that's happened with is Ryan Edwards. He was going off the bench and getting a lot of time at the start of the season, but he's disappeared into a hole.
He's not injured, is he?
I don't think so.
Different kind of player, a little bit quicker, a bit nippier, but
Last I saw him was at Brentford, and he got a start that game, and he did absolutely nothing.
It was a shocker, wasn't it?
Too lightweight, I think. Yeah. For this league.
But as I said, those academy players that were all getting a lot of game time, as we mentioned, you know, Reading, I remember they went up to Middlesbrough and Adkins said they had 12 players unavailable, and now we're sitting here saying everybody's fit, plus they've, you know, got in a couple of extra bodies. So, you know, it's very, very difficult for the likes of Edwards, and it's for the best, because they can hopefully go out on loan and really get a solid run of games and come back stronger. But some of them just aren't going to make it. That's not me being harsh, that's just the nature of it. You do see these players that do have 5 or 6 games for your club, your Lee Barkuses, you might remember from back in the day, people like that that come in, have a few, Alan Carey. These players that come in, have a cup of coffee, and then Neville Roach. Neville Roach. These players that come in for a while and you think, oh, they do one or two things, you think, oh, they could be great, but unfortunately on the balance of things, they're not quite there. So anyway, watch this space. That's the beauty of being a younger player. You've got time to grow.
Stuart Taylor's made a career out of that, really, hasn't he?
What, on the bench?
Yeah, bench warming.
Mm. He's got a Championship winner's medal, John. He's won a Premier League title.
This is true, but, you know.
Yeah, the last 10 years. Richard Wright's doing well at that as well. Anyway, moving along, because we've got plenty to get through. And Will, another member of our editorial team, says, is our season over if we're knocked out of the cup on Saturday? Of course not, Will. We could always get relegated. Mm-hmm. Seriously, though, is that does that really extinguish your excitement for the season if we go out on Saturday?
Not necessarily. I think it's still going to be exciting. We're still going to need to get results. If we can continue playing like we did last Saturday, then I'll be very happy, because we weren't getting results or performances in the last year or so, whereas now we are getting performances, and hopefully eventually we'll get results. We need to, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see the Clark project take shape, and we do need points. I mean, we are in danger, I think, and so, you know, it's far from over, much as I do think it is the most important thing.
Yeah. Right, moving on to your tweets. Just before we get to that, I'll give a quick plug for this podcast. If you do listen to this and you enjoy it, please give us a subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. It's very helpful, helps push us up the charts and helps more people find us. So it doesn't take anything, even if you don't listen. Just subscribe on your iPad or something. We don't ask that you listen. We just ask that you download, because they all count the same. So tell a mate or tell someone else in your house, subscribe to the Tarlhurst End. It's very easy to find. We put it on every post of this show up on the website. So give us a subscribe. Anyway, moving on to the tweets that have been sent into at the Tarlhurst End. We start with Derek Walmsley, who said about the Fulham game on Saturday, "We lost, but an entertaining game. If the team was good to watch, the feel good factor and crowds make us stronger long term. Oh, sorry. If the team's good to watch, we'll have a feel good factor, and the crowds will make us stronger in the long term." Sorry about that, Derek.
Yeah, and
that's a reason not to subscribe to this podcast. Botches like that. But carry on.
Yeah, and you know, as I said, the performances are what's the most important thing. 2 weeks ago against Norwich, really, really good game, exciting game. Certainly the crowd will have enjoyed that, not just because we won. This game at Fulham, anyone who went will have seen that we were playing amazing football for half an hour or so and should not have lost that game there.
Amazing's a little bit strong, isn't it?
Well, yeah, okay. amazing football would have been, we, you know, not four or five past them, but it was quick, it was speedy, it was, you know, we were playing very well, and, you know, Fulham were basically back in their shells. And Middlesbrough, you know, a defensive performance against a top four team, I had no complaints with that. Hopefully the crowds will come back, and I think, you know, Steve Clarke certainly seems to have got the fans on side in the short time he's been here.
Yeah, Rob, I'll pitch the next question to you. This comes from Matt Williams. He says, "If not Glenn Murray, who would be alternative and realistic options in the transfer market that you'd take up front? Bit more of a Football League experience covering the two of us. Any names that..."
Bit of a hospital pass there, Dan. I mean,
this is what we do to our guests.
I'm jumpy and maybe a little bit conservative about the financial situation, so I think I'd probably rather have someone on loan. And maybe someone from the Premier League, you know, someone who, you know, like, who's on fringe player in the Premier League would be best.
Well, to try and help you out a bit, I mean, obviously we've had a few transfer rumours that we reported on last week's show. The likes of Nicky Maynard, Will Keane... Anything?
I didn't think either of those were that exciting. Maynard seems to have completely fallen off a cliff. And
Cardiff Aztay is another one that's been mentioned.
I see him as a bit of a mixture between a straight forward and a wide player, really. So I don't think we're going to get a lot of goals from him. I think he would be competing more with Robson Kanu, which is probably a good thing, and McCleary. Keane, initially I was quite excited when you were talking about him with Charles on last week, but then you mentioned that he actually is yet to score a goal in senior football, and you think, I mean, that's quite a big thing. Maybe someone from the league below. I mean, if Joe Garner at Preston, if he were fit, then someone like him, we wouldn't be able to get him because nothing's pretty happy there, etc. But you know he's injured at the moment as well, but you know, maybe someone, you know, like this season's Callum Wilson,
who's, or Naki Wells,
yeah, you know, that kind of thing. I think maybe someone from League One or League Two, but I suppose you could say we did that with Nick Blackman, and that hasn't really worked.
Yeah, here's a name to throw at the both of you that's been mooted in recent weeks. Kevin Doyle. Any desire for a return?
No, he's lost that pace, and he was never a prolific striker in the first place. I think he was always a striker who would run and, you know,
not still chipped him with 15 goals a couple of times.
Yeah, but he's, you know, I think he's lost that, and he's at Palace now, isn't he?
No, he's come back. He's gone back to Wolves, where he's obviously not wanted.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if he could come back and prove it that he's fit and that he's still got that hunger and, you know, he can still finish, then absolutely. But you never know that, do you, with a player like that?
I mean, I absolutely love him. He's one of my all-time favourite players, but, you know, this is like a lot of that team. One of the main anguish-inducing things in my life is how many of that team have gone on and have been a bit disappointing subsequently at their various clubs. You know, one or two have done okay, but quite a few of them just, you know, Kitson, Sonko, etc., just never did it as well afterwards. And Doyle, he was pretty good at times, but... yeah, I mean, I don't really... The never-go-back thing as well. I mean, I know it occasionally works, but we tried it with Kitson and Little and all sorts of people.
Both of those came back and they didn't exactly prove that they were still the same players that they were.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, even with a few more years down the line, that doing that with Kevin Doyle would be the right thing.
Okay. Well, moving on then. Chris Hartley, regular tweeter in. Thanks again for your tweet, Chris. He says, which players would look to move on in January? Name that immediately comes to mind, and unfortunately we've mentioned him in a positive way, but I'd say Hope Akpan.
I don't think you necessarily need to move him on, because...
But I think he's in the Sean Cummings category of, he's a player who you could possibly get a fee for, and is possibly expendable, whereas the likes of Danny Guthrie, probably not going to get any money for him because of the wage he's on.
But then Danny Guthrie's contract expires at the end of the season. Are we going to renew that because of the wage he's on? I don't think you can let go of anyone in that squad because you saw how threadbare it was when we had that injury crisis. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen again, but if you lose...
God, I hope not.
Exactly, but if you lose two central midfielders again, or, you know, if Jem, God forbid, has another, you know, has a recurrence of the injury, or, you know, we run McCleary into the ground, then suddenly the squad does look thin again. What if a beater breaks his leg? Then you haven't got a left back. You know, obviously, yeah, I hope that doesn't happen.
My idea would be not to sell Hope Akpan for the sake of it, but sell Hope Akpan to generate funds to put into other areas.
But I think you'd need more money than you generate from Hope Akpan.
Yeah, I don't think we'd get much. And you know, he's only just fit. And there's only, I don't know, 10 days to go. And I just don't think anybody would come in for him if there's, you know, was it failed fitness tests and things. Probably we wouldn't be match fit. I mean, Nick Blackman, maybe, I don't know, if someone were willing to take him off our hands. But I think Johnny's right. I mean, the squad's thin. That's why someone like Dominic Samuel, who you'd love to see go out on loan, to really see what he can do. We can't let him go at the moment because he's sort of been on the bench a couple of times. If Pog gets injured, he might be in the team.
Do you do accept it? It's funny, we mentioned him earlier again. Jake Taylor. Would you take a bid for Jake Taylor? Someone coming with a quarter of a million for him?
I think so. And Ryan Edwards as well.
Ryan Edwards would be, a loan or something like that would be really beneficial. I was a bit disappointed with Tshibola, you know, only going to Hartlepool.
He's done quite well, though. He's got some good reviews.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, they are sort of like right at the bottom of the league, and you wonder whether he could have got a League One go, you know, and that would have been allowed us to gauge, you know, just how good he's going to be, you know. Because, I mean, I've liked the look of him when I've seen him for the under-21s.
Yeah.
I think he's quite a classy player. So.
Anybody else that you might look to shift on? I think most people would drive Pavel Pogrebniak somewhere if someone offered to take that shall we, as he puts it, shall we say, not small wage packet off our hands.
Yeah, no, I think he can go because that would free up, you know, that would free up significant amount of money for someone else. Whereas I don't imagine Hope Akpan's on a big contract. I don't imagine we get much of a fee for it.
Don't get me wrong, if you're listening, Hope, I've got no desire to boot you out of the club. But again, I consider you in the Sean Cummings bracket. As I said, as a player that you might be able to get a decent fee for, I don't think he's going to be really pushing the first team. I think if someone came in, I think you'd be silly not to take someone.
I think on Pog, the food counter at Harrods are looking for a commie chef, so maybe they'll take him off our hands, you know. So yeah.
Yeah. As I said, I would.
He's got a flat in Chelsea as well, so it wouldn't be a bad commute for him.
Most people will drive him. So even if it's Russia, I'm sure you could cobble together a few Reading fans to do take it in shifts.
Well, I could see him potentially going to Russia. I mean, such is the arcane nature of transfers and transfer fees in the Russian market that, you know, you could maybe see someone thinking, oh, I'm going to take a chance on him. Because he made the provisional squad, didn't he, for the World Cup?
He did. And I think he gave an interview recently that was up on Tullison. And I think his brother plays, I think, for one of the Moscow clubs.
Right.
So there's a link there. And he was asked, oh, are you going to come and join us? He said, oh, well, you know, in the future, but I'm quite happy in England at the moment. I think his family... That short-lived show, was it Meet the Russians or something along those lines? Yeah, yeah. His wife made it abundantly clear that she likes the English lifestyle and he's got a young family and they seem settled. And, you know, I'm not going to have a go at Pog. The contract was given to him. You know, it was our stupid former owner that made that offer. And he's perfectly entitled to pick up his wages. And at least he puts in a shift, unlike someone like a Royston Drenthe.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he put in a real shift on Saturday. I mean, Clark was enthusing about him, wasn't he?
I think he was fired up because, you know, against his former side.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you know, he always puts in a shift. I think that's partly down to frustration as well, possibly with how things have panned out for him. Not that his wage packet's particularly bad, but, you know, I think if Big came in for him, we wouldn't say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, moving along. Matt, Rorty points. He says, is Nick Blackman the worst striker we've had during the Medeski Stadium period? Also consider, has he fallen over the most?
Has he fallen over the most? Maybe. Is
Tony Rouget has given him a run for his money on that one.
Is he the worst striker we've had? No. Nowhere near.
He's not even a striker, so therefore he doesn't count.
But you know, I still stick up for Nick Blackman. He's shown flashes. A bit like Robson Kanu. He's falling into that sort of category where he's got potential, but he just can't.
He's a million-pound striker, though, Johnny.
But a million, there are loads of strikers who are million-pound strikers these days. It's not 2000.
Not a Reading, though.
No, but, you know, it's not 2005 and signing Leroy Lita for £1 million and breaking the bank. There are a lot of strikers who are £1 million strikers now. I still think that he has something to give in the side. And again, he's a confidence player. That goal he scored against
Huddersfield.
Huddersfield, you know, brilliant team goal with Hal Robson-Kanu. So he has got potential in him. And I wouldn't write him off just yet. We wrote off Shane Long and he came good.
That's true. Yeah. Two-word answer, Paul Brayson.
Yeah, the default.
Fleck.
Yeah.
Is he better or worse than Martin Williams? Martin Williams fell over a lot as well.
Martin Williams was a winger as well, wasn't he? You know, so a little bit of a hybrid. As is Blackman, to be honest. I mean, he's not an out-and-out striker. I would like to see him work harder, that's all. You know, really, really put in a bit more of a shift. And I think one of the issues is with the cover when it comes to sort of covering the fullback. And, you know, I still think it was a disappointing signing. But like Johnny, you always want to will people to do well.
The worrying thing for me is, and okay, he scored, 15 goals, I think, for Sheffield United, albeit a lot of them penalties. But apart from that, again, in all of his previous loan spells and things, never set the world alight. And you just wonder whether Reading panicked based on that great game he had against him in the cup and half season.
I think that's obvious that our scouting was pretty much just buy players off the League One teams we just played in the cup, as soon as we got Akpan at the same time. But no, I still think that he has shown bits, flashes of not brilliance, but you know, certainly that he can be a striker going forward. I wouldn't write him off just yet.
He's very, very close to the line. He's got, for me, 6 months now to show what he's got, because he's had 2 years at the football club. He's not young. Let's not fall into the trap of, oh, he's still young and inexperienced. He's 25 years old. He should be coming into his peak years.
You say he's had 2 years at the club. How many has Hal Robson-Kanu had?
Well,
ten.
Yeah,
but even how I'd argue that Hal Robson-Kanu's delivered more in terms of end product for Eddie than Nick Blackman has.
Maybe.
Hal Robson-Kanu's won you more points.
Two more words for you, Keith Scott.
You had to lower the tone, didn't you, Johnny?
500,000 rumoured fee as well.
Yeah. I swear they signed him off the back of a good game against Reading as well. Yeah. I still need to remember he played well for Wickham. That was the thing. Reading went and signed Keith Scott, and Wickham turned around and used the money to buy Sean Devine, who I think he then had a 2-year period of just banging home goals left, right and centre. Laurie Sanchez inspired Wickham. Anyway, enough reminiscing. God, managed to get in a Sean Goethe. Paul Brayson got it's a lot of
the history of Reading strikers.
Crowbarring,
I think it always happens when I come on because of my...
Yeah.
Kevin Doyle, we've had him in as well.
Yeah. It depresses me to think of Kevin Doyle as an old Reading striker, but I suppose he is, considering he signed nearly a decade ago. Well, it was a decade ago. 2005 he signed. That's 10 years now since the title-winning season started. That's scary. Anyway.
78 grand striker.
Yeah, absolutely. Or 1 week of Royston Gentry and Pavel Pogrebniak. Joe Stevenson, if Glenn Murray does come in, fancy any other business or think that'll be financially all we can afford? If it was £2 million, I'd say that's all we can afford.
That's it. And I think that squad would be enough.
Would you be happy with that, Rob?
It'd be enough to keep us out of League One, definitely. Yeah, I think the current squad actually should be enough to keep us out of League One. But that is in no way being complacent if fans of other clubs are listening. I don't really, I definitely think we're a candidate to go down, but I think, you know, the players... I looked at the team on Saturday and I thought, you know, it's looking pretty good again. People like McCleary back in the team, you think. There's no way McCleary's a relegation player, you know. I think so.
Yeah, I can't see it. I think it would only be one in, one out. I said if they did get a surprise bid for someone like a Pog or a Guthrie. But, they've got to settle for what they can buy. Mark Sugar goes, a month on with Clark in charge... Clark in charge. What changes to the playing style have and have not worked so far?
The defence.
In working. In has worked, I presume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's definitely worked. I think wing play as well. You know, it was almost like watching Reading of sort of 10 years ago get out to wingers, put the cross in the box. And unfortunately, we didn't have anyone there to finish it. You know, the only goal we got was from a corner when you look at the raw stats of it. I think he's working quite well. the mistakes for the two for the their two goals, I guess, you know, they were mistakes that possibly that team would have made, you know, 6 months ago or even a month ago under Adkins as well. So I can't say that he's got worse in any area. I think he's, you know, he's improved us all over the pitch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't been to every game. I have to stress that. But I think the key thing for me is ever since the Premier League season, there's been a big gap between the central defenders and teams have just been cutting through us at will. And often that was because of the quality that they had. But after coming down, it was less because of that. I think it was more just because we weren't set up right. And I think, you know, he seems to have like narrowed the gap between the two central defenders and trusted them to kind of clear the crosses that, that come in. So, yes, I think that's the thing. I mean, I really lap up the prospect of us being really defensive, I have to say. I think we really need to get back to basics. Mm. So, and started already. So,
for me, the only negatives are the central midfielders. I said it earlier, I'd like to see them gambling more. I want to see them get into the box and just take a chance. Just make a charge down the field. Get yourself... Because it's amazing what that can do to disrupt a penalty. Rather than you having sort of a cone around the edge of the box where it's just passes sideways or a hopeful punt in, hoping one of the strikers gets on the end. You can cause mayhem, and I would like to see that. But hopefully that will come in time. And I've got a positive little feeling that Cem Karaca'an might fill that role when he does come back to full fitness, but we'll see. Right, let's rattle through the rest of these then quickly. I'll do two or three in a row. Let's start with Ollie Allen, who says, unlikely it will happen, but relegation and then FA Cup win or lose in the cup and miraculously get promoted.
I'd rather win the FA Cup and be relegated and be down for the next 50 years. I mean, winning the FA Cup, I mean, are you realistic? Reading winning the FA Cup.
Amazing. I mean, it's, season in Europe as well that you get from that, it as
I
well.
I mean, football's about glory, and I just think it's so much more important than the league. But I think because the competition is packed full of higher level Championship and Premier League teams, I think it's not like one of those soft years where you can kind of sneak through.
Mm.
So, I mean, I think we've got a great chance on Saturday of winning. But... yeah, the FA Cup's way more important at the moment.
So FA Cup or promotion, Johnny? Which one would you take this season?
FA Cup.
No. Well, promotion. I mean, promotion from here would be, but that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Whereas we've got a chance of winning the FA Cup. I'd say we've got more chance of winning the FA Cup than we've got of being promoted.
I would take the relegation and the FA Cup win. Because like you said, Rob, the chance of glory in that, and you'd get a European season off the back of it, and you would be talking about that for a decade, whereas get back to the Premier League... Sorry to say, but been there and done it. Mm. And recently as well.
And relegation, we should have a chance of coming back after a year or two. So,
and yet they say that the value of the FA Cup has been lessened in recent years. Yeah. I don't think so at all. No. I'd love to win it.
I think only if you're a fan of a top four club, top five club. Otherwise, it's still...
I think even those teams want to win the FA Cup now because they want to win something.
Yeah. They want bragging rights. Right, moving on. Gary Woodward. Are there any real formed partnerships in the current team? Gunter and Gareth McClure are the only pair who seem to read each other's game. Williams and Norwood seem to be coming along to a pretty decent understanding. Pearce and Hector getting better, getting there. The whole back five really is a unit.
Yeah, Pearce and Hector certainly know they've had a lot of game time together. Gunter and Mackie was a promising partnership when we saw them a couple of weeks ago, possibly against Middlesbrough, possibly another game. Even Howell and Obita on the left wing, I think, are just about getting there.
Yeah, I mean, they're a bit far away on the pitch, but Obita and Murray at times, you know, you get those bent crosses coming in and he was able to read them quite well. I mean, obviously he's not at the club now, but... Overall, though, these are all a bit tenuous. I mean, I would see the McCleary and Gunter one as a really experienced, solid one. And it's up to Clark now to kind of try and engender some of those other ones and get them really working.
Yeah, and have the very fact that we've now, as I keep saying, have all these players back fit, they'll allow these patches to build. A lot of the time it was getting disrupted because Adkins was changing the team around to fill holes and injuries and desperately trying to find form and stuff as well. It's like I thought Cox and Murray were forming a great partnership and then all of a sudden... Adkins went through that phase of just dropping Cox.
Yeah.
Never really went away. So we'll see how those things develop. George Flood. Should Clark reshape the midfield in an attempt to increase goal scoring output? Karaca'an in? Guthrie at 10?
I think he tried that. Possibly in the FA Cup when he put Guthrie, Norwood and Williams all in the same midfield. So I think he's thinking about it. But clearly the fact he's playing with two strikers means he does want to try and score goals.
Yeah,
and you know, we had enough chances on Saturday, just no one to finish
them. Yeah, and I'll roll Bobbin's question into this for you as well, Rob. He says, what formation could we realistically use to make us more creative and why?
More creative. I mean, the fashion is the kind of 4-3-3 type thing, but I think at the moment, I'm not a huge fan of 4-4-2 usually, but I think needs must at the moment. I think we've just got to get everybody in the positions. And Norwood and Williams, they're in the box seat. They're in the team. They don't necessarily deserve to be dropped. It's up to the others to come in. And Guthrie might be the kind of player who'll come on late in a game and offer something different.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a 4-3-3. I could see Pogrebniak in the middle and say McCleary and Mackie, or McCleary and Robson Kanu, or a Blackburn. And then you have three dynamic midfielders of, say, Williams and Karachan, and maybe a Norwood in between them. It could work, but...
Yeah, we have to be careful about not being outnumbered in midfield, which has happened quite a bit under McDermott, actually. I think it was one of his weaknesses, that often the opposition would have three in midfield and we'd only have two in the centre.
Legend and Karachan did such a good job, though. Especially Karachan's legs did such a good job of making up for that. That's what I mean. If you had the legs of a Karachan and Williams in there, you might be able to offset it.
Yeah.
But this is football manager style stuff here, so stick to what we know. And finally, Dean Bennett. If we play like we did on Saturday for the rest of the season, do you see any reason why a playoff push isn't possible?
Yes, we are too far behind.
Yeah, suddenly you look at the table and you look at the team who I think are in sixth, which is Watford, and you think they're a very strong team.
Mm.
So I can't see. I think we are too far behind. Yeah.
I mean, the way I said it is, I think we're on, what, 30 or so points at the moment?
Yeah.
You want at the very least 70 points for a playoff, and I don't think that will be enough
this
season.
The bigger question for me to come out of that, though, Johnny, is do you think that that was a performance you would associate with a playoff pushing team?
Just about, but Fulham aren't really up to very much. You know, they're 17th in the table as well. And, you know, the fact that we performed well, but we still didn't get the result, we've got a lot to work on, and... Would I feel confident going to Derby or Middlesbrough? Well, if we got those two results against Middlesbrough, we'd be going to Wembley right now. But, you know, Brentford, Watford, Norwich. Won twice against Norwich, so that's irrelevant again. I think any team can beat any team on their day, but I think we're too far behind at the moment. As I said, you need 45 points or so from...
15 wins out of 20 games, that is.
Yeah, exactly. 45 points in 20 games is not going to happen.
Don't think so. Right, thanks very much to all of you who've got in touch with us this week. As I said, at the Tarlest End is the Twitter address. You can get us at thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and also facebook.com/thetarlestend. Just time for Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any Other Business.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. FA Cup action, as we've mentioned, on Saturday. Reading head to Cardiff. Difficult to call this one. Obviously, cup ties are always a bit unpredictable, and sod's law that we've got another championship side away. But Rob, the obvious question here is, do you tinker with the team? Do you give this as a chance for maybe the likes of Samuel, Karachan, Danny Guthrie to get a start? Or does Steve Clarke give the players who played at Fulham another go out and hope they can play that same way?
You absolutely keep the same team all day long. I mean, you have to. I think we've got to field our strongest team, whether that's the same team or it isn't. Is a moot point, but I think it will be the same team given the strength of the performance at Fulham. And I think it's very important. Like I said, if we get through, it's going to be a very tough lineup from the fifth round, but I still think it's important. So,
Johnny, change the team? Or
I think I'd make a couple of changes, just bearing in mind that we do play Millwall away 3 days later, and you might want to keep a few players fresh. I think McCleary at the moment could still get a little bit wrapped in cotton wool because, he was absolutely gassed by the end of the Fulham match because he stayed on for 90 minutes and he's still working his way back to full fitness. As I said, chance for Karachan to get a run out possibly, although I sort of want to keep him in cotton wool as well.
Got to play some time.
He does. I think the back four's got to stay the same. Keeper, obviously, well, he might give Anderson another go. But
yeah, he kept a clean sheet at Huddersfield.
Mm. I'd make a couple of changes in there. Probably Karachan in, probably Mackie in on the wing. And just see how it all goes up front.
I'd probably rest Chris Gunter. He probably won't want to be rested against his former club, but I think he's worked so hard this season. I think giving Stephen Kelly a run out wouldn't be a bad thing. Dom Samuel, I want to see what he can do, even if it's just to prove, you know, to the manager and to the fans that he's not quite ready.
Mm.
I think, you know, he deserves a chance after all the goals he scores in the under-21s. Whereas, what does it really say to those under-21 players, you know, you're playing these games, you bang home the goals and you still don't get a chance in the team. Mm-hmm. So I'd like that to happen. But otherwise, no, I think you keep it pretty much the same. Maybe a gem in, but you know, you don't make wholesale changes for the sake of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that Cardiff, I think they're there for the taking because they've made a couple of signings in the last couple of weeks. Alex Revel and Scott Malone from sort of Rotherham and Millwall, who are both quite decent low division players, although no doubt a lot of the Cardiff fans will be quite underwhelmed by those kinds of signings, given what they've been used to having over the last 18 months to 2 years. But those players that come in, they're likely to be, I'm sure they're likely to be cup-tied, and they're the current first choices. So I think Slade is going to have to go back to players who are possibly disgruntled about being left out of the team for the last couple of league games. And I see that he's said in the press today that he wants to completely change his squad. So I just think, you know, they really are psychologically vulnerable. But then again, I think Fulham were as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like Johnny said, I don't think we should get carried away with the performance at Fulham. Because I think Fulham, you know, again, quite brittle mentally.
I think they'd lost four in a row before they played us.
Yes, I know. But I think Cardiff locked in a lot of goals before Christmas. I mean, they had some hammerings. I don't think they're great. I think it's an eminently winnable game.
Yeah, but they have got the ex-Royal factor, obviously, in Adam Lavondra and Sean Morrison, and both of whom are bound to score. Interesting to see whether Alfie gets booed again. It upset him.
Is Alfie even playing for Cardiff at the moment?
Yeah. He played at the weekend.
Not really scoring, but he's still playing.
It's a disastrous season. I mean, like 3 goals and 21, I think.
I think Morrison scored 4 or 5.
Scored 4. Morrison, I think, has done okay. But, I mean, I think they're... You know, we know what his weaknesses are. Mind you, we don't have necessarily anybody to counter
them.
No room
in pace, basically.
But with Alfie, I really hope he doesn't get booed, I have to say. I think, you know, bygones are bygones. Mm. Yeah.
Right, so that does it. We'll move on to the predictions then. This won't count in our official TLSM Prediction League, of which I can announce there is a new joint leader at the top. Johnny crowing a few weeks ago, thinking he had this thing wrapped up. Had lit the cigar, the bookies had paid out on a Johnny win, but oh no, don't count out Wimb. I've stormed back to tie the standings with 17 points each at the top of the prediction league.
That last minute goal at Fulham made it a 6-point swing. I went for a 1-1, he went for a 2-1 win to Fulham. 6-point swing, all because of whoever scored that goal.
Brian Ruiz.
International Brian Ruiz.
Yeah. Mm. To be fair, we can't exactly complain about that, considering Pavel Pogrebniak scored his first goal in 9 months against his former club as well. You can just imagine what the Fulham reaction would have been if that had been the a match winner. But I predicted a 2-1 Fulham win. I take no joy in that. I only take joy in tying with Johnny. Me and Johnny are on 17 points. Westy remains on 10 and Charles Watts is on 12. We're unclear if we're going to do a show before the Millwall away game, so we won't do our predictions for that, but... we'll announce that in the next show, wherever that may be. So, score prediction, Johnny. Do you think we're going to get through?
I think a 2-2 draw. I wouldn't want a replay right now because I think fixture congestion could catch up with us. But I think a 2-2 draw. We'll score a couple. They'll score a couple.
Rob?
I think we'll win 2-0.
Clean sheet.
I will go because bad things happen when we all predict positiveness. So I'd say 3-1 Cardiff win. But anyway, have your say. Pick your 18. If you head over to thetarsen.com, you can use our squad selector and pick your 18. At the moment, it's a pretty divided fan base between those that want to see the likes of Dom Samuel and Jem Karachan get a run out and those that want to keep a strong team. So go cast your votes and you can follow along with the votes and we'll publish those later in the week. Just a few other things now to wrap up before we go. As mentioned, plenty of content up on thetarsen.com. You can head there. As I said, we've got the squad selector up. You can check out the first in Mark's alternative history pieces, where he looks at what might have happened had Reading made the playoffs last year. And Nigel Atkins, not a very serious post. Some good gags in there. Also, check out the bus tour of Reading. For those of you who may not have visited our fair town, it gives a unique perspective at some of the sights, prompted by a Middlesbrough fan singing, this place is a S-hole. I want to go home.
I'm glad the Reading Elvis video got added to that piece.
Yeah.
Love Reading Elvis.
Key part of Reading's history. So go check that out. Obviously, the stats test do some great things as well. And Bucks Royals 5 things are well worth a read. But Rob, we've got you here as well. I mean, what can we expect to see on the Two Unfortunates now and over the next few months? Anything in the works?
We've got a sort of series of posts at the end of January on gender and football, looking at loads of issues like the women's game and also women as supporters, etc. We've quite a number of contributors from around the country working on that. So that's going to be the week beginning the 27th or 26th, I think. And we've got a couple of book reviews before then, including a really interesting one that's been written by a blogger about the financial situation over the last few years at Birmingham City, which has been an incredible story. And this blogger, Daniel Ivory, who does the blog Often Partisan, he has been incredible in the way he's dug up all this information. He's even gone over to Hong Kong to chase down Carson Young and that kind of thing, which is going a bit above and beyond. And we've got a book review of the book, which is apparently very good. So that's going up probably in the next couple of days. So,
certainly a place to check that out. Where can they visit the website?
It's www.the2unfortunates.com.
And on Twitter?
At 2unfortunates, I think. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, mentioning Birmingham here, I'm going to end this show on a bad joke. They came out today and say someone had stolen 2.5 million from them. I said the finger has to surely be pointed at Nikola Zigic.
Yes.
The money. Although credit to Nikola Zigic, because he's gone back there, hasn't he? And I think he's getting paid like a tenth of what he was getting paid before. So, no, credit to you. I mean, you've got to actually enjoy football to do that. So credit to you, Nikola, although... presume the wages you picked up in the previous 4 years might just soften the blow. Anyway, plenty to look forward to. Rob, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully get you on again.
Yep.
We'll unfortunately, we'll probably be back to that unprofessional joke of a podcaster next week. And in the meantime, on Friday as well, I'll be speaking to Charles ahead of the Cup game. We'll get the very latest team news. We'll find out if the likes of Akpan, Anton Ferdinand and Jem might be involved. So stay tuned. As I mentioned before, please give us a subscribe on iTunes. It's the best way to get both shows straight to your iPad, iPhone, whatever device you've got. Plenty of other ways to subscribe as well on other platforms. So thank you to all those who've done and left us reviews as well. Very much appreciated. As I said, head to thetalehearst.com. Loads of content. We'll be back on hopefully Monday, but we might just put it back to Wednesday after the Millwall game. We'll have a tenuous
discussion.
Have a discussion after the podcast. But as I said, Rob, thanks very much for joining us. In the meantime, let's hope we can get ourselves in the hat for the fifth round. Come on, you arse.